Leadership transitions are always challenging, but I would suggest they're even more challenging when you're talking about spiritual leaders and the need for change has been initiated by God. Again, a reminder through our Samuel series, we're defining leadership in very general terms. That if you are serious about being a Christ follower, and you desire to influence others for Christ, that is leadership. But we learned last week that man looks on the outward appearance, but God looks at the heart, because God sees what man cannot see. Sometimes God knows there's a need for leadership change, and God initiates that change. But that raises a challenge, because how does God communicate the need for change when he sees what man does not see? There's probably a number of different ways that God does that, but one of the ways I think God consistently does that is he introduces a giant into the story. Because giants tend to expose what's really in a leader's heart. That's what we want to talk about this morning. If you have a Bible, turn with us to 1 Samuel chapter 17. Probably by far the best known story in 1 Samuel, one of the great Old Testament stories. We often refer to it as the story of David and Goliath, but that's not really correct. It is the story of David and Saul. God is using Goliath the giant as a way to expose or to reveal what is in Saul's heart and what is in David's heart and why a change is necessary. There's no way really to figure out how much time has elapsed between chapter 16, when David is anointed, chapter 17. Most scholars guess maybe 3 to 5 years. So maybe David was 12-ish chapter 16 when he's anointed, maybe 15 or 16-ish in chapter 17. Verse 1, now the Philistines gathered their armies for battle, and they were gathered at Soko, which belongs to Judah. And they camped between Soko and Azekah in Ephes Damin. Saul and the men of Israel were gathered and camped in the valley of Elah and drew up in battle array to encounter the Philistines. The Philistines stood on the mountain on one side while Israel stood on the mountain on the other side with the valley in between them. Then a champion came out from the armies of the Philistines named Goliath from Gath, whose height was 6 cubits and a span. He had a bronze helmet on his head, and he was clothed with scale armor, which weighed 5,000 shekels of bronze. He also had a bronze greaves on his legs and a bronze javelin slung between his shoulders. The shaft of his spear was like a weaver's beam, and the head of his spear weighed 600 shekels of iron. His shield carrier also walked before him. He stood and shouted to the ranks of Israel and said to them, "Why do you come out and draw up in battle array? Am I not the Philistine, and you the servants of Saul? Choose a man for yourselves and let him come down to me. If he is able to fight with me and kill me, then we will become your servants. But if I prevail against him and kill him, then you shall become our servants and serve us." Again, the Philistine said, "I defy the ranks of Israel this day. Give me a man that we may fight together." When Saul and all Israel heard these words of the Philistine, they were dismayed and greatly afraid. We have a lot of ground to cover. A lot of the story is pretty straightforward, but just comments on some of these paragraphs. So the Philistines are on one side of the mountain. There's a valley in between. Israel on the other side of the mountain. This area is about 12 to 15 miles just straight west of Bethlehem. So the champion of the Philistines, Goliath, comes out and issues this challenge. I don't believe it would be correct to say this was common in the ancient world, but it happened on occasions. A lot of scholars think the Philistines maybe brought this particular protocol with them. They'd been in the area 100 to 150 years, landed on the coastal plain, perhaps brought this practice with them. Typically, if you thought you had the greater champion, it would make sense, less bloodshed. Typically, these would end the way this one ended. The losers don't just roll over and become servants. They run, and the winners chase them and kill them. So this story is kind of consistent with how it usually worked itself out. So Goliath comes forth. There's quite a bit of text dedicated to describing him. He's over 9 feet tall, and I know skeptics in the 21st century kind of laugh at the possibility of that. But even in the 20th century, we had a man that was 8.5 feet tall. So there's quite a bit of evidence there were people that big in that day. There's no reason why that should be hard to believe. He wore about 125 pounds of armor, a huge spear. His spear was tipped with a spearhead that weighed about 15 pounds. And he was obviously a very formidable opponent. So he calls out the champion of Israel and lets have at it, one-on-one, winner take all. We're told that in verse 11, Saul and Israel heard these words and were dismayed and greatly afraid. The Hebrew translated greatly afraid, literally, they were absolutely terrified. Now, if you go back and remember the story, the reason the nation wanted a human king was specifically they wanted someone to fight their battles for them. Saul was described several times as head and shoulders taller, bigger than anyone else in Israel. Saul is the logical choice to be the champion of Israel, but he's in his tent, he is terrified, and he is not coming out. Verse 12, now David was the son of the Ephrathite of Bethlehem in Judah, whose name was Jesse. And he had 8 sons, and Jesse was told in the days of Saul, was old in the days of Saul, advanced in years among men. The 3 older sons of Jesse had gone after Saul to the battle, and the names of his 3 sons who went to the battle were Eliab, the firstborn, and the 2nd to him, Abinadab, and the 3rd, Shema. David was the youngest. Now the 3 oldest followed Saul, but David went back and forth from Saul to tend his father's flock at Bethlehem. The Philistine came forward morning and evening for 40 days and took his stand. So now David is introduced into the story. David is a shepherd boy. He's back with his dad, goes back and forth. It wasn't unusual in the ancient Near East that families were responsible to make sure family members had food at the battlefront. So this is a fairly common practice. Someone had to come bring food when it was an extended standoff like this. It's interesting, the same 3 sons that are named in chapter 16 as those that were passed over by God to be the next king are the same 3 that are specifically named in this text, including the reminder Eliab was the oldest. In that culture, the likely one to be anointed, yet it was David the youngest. 3 times in 2 verses, we are told that they went with Saul, meaning they were professional soldiers. So you have the 3 oldest sons who were real men, who were professional soldiers that were out at the front on the battle lines. And then you have little David, youngest brother, shepherd boy, going back and forth. The other detail is we find out that Goliath had come forth day and night for 40 days. Now just think about this, 40 days of absolute terror at this seemingly invincible foe, taunting, defying, shaming the armies of God and indirectly God himself. Then Jesse said to David, his son, Take now for your brothers an ephah of this roasted grain and these 10 loaves and run to the camp to your brothers. Bring also these 10 cuts of cheese to the commander of their thousand and look into the welfare of your brothers and bring back news of them. For Saul and they and all the men of Israel are in the valley of Elah fighting with the Philistines. So David arose early in the morning and left the flock with a keeper and took the supplies and went as Jesse had commanded him. And he came to the circle of the camp while the army was going out in battle array, shouting the war cry. Israel and the Philistines drew up in battle array against army against army. Then David left his baggage in the care of the baggage keeper and ran to the battle line and entered in order to greet his brothers. As he was talking with them, behold, the champion, the Philistine from Gath, named Goliath, was coming up from the army of the Philistines, and he spoke these same words, and David heard them. So David goes to the battlefront, and there's a little detail that would be easy to read over without notice, but it is important detail. Why is it necessary to tell us that David went first to the baggage keeper, dropped off his baggage, and then went to the battlefront? Well, we need to remember David was anointed to replace another king who also had a baggage story. When it was time to anoint Saul as the first king of Israel, where was Saul? Answer, hiding in the baggage. So that is a little bit of a reflection of Saul's character. Now you have this little shepherd boy, gets to the battlefront, drops off his baggage, but immediately runs to the front lines where the action is. That again is a glimpse of the character of this shepherd boy that is beginning to develop why God is making a change. Apparently, every day, both the Philistines and the Israelites would dress up in their gear and they would yell at each other. And they just did this every day for 40 days. And then Goliath comes forth and David hears that. When all the men of Israel saw the man, they fled from him and were greatly afraid. The men of Israel said, "Have you seen this man who is coming up? Surely he is coming up to defy Israel. And it will be that the king will enrich the man who kills him with great riches and will give him his daughter and make his father's house free in Israel." So this is the second time the language has been used, defy Israel. It's a Hebrew word that means to shame, to taunt, to mock. So this is some pretty serious trash talking going on. And the Saul and the army are absolutely terrified. David is told that if someone kills the giant, Saul has offered him three things. It's very clear by this point in the story, Saul has no interest in leaving the tent and fighting the giant. So he's upping the ante, trying to get someone to go out and do it for him. They get riches. They get Saul's daughter. And we're just going to assume that was a good thing. And they get freedom. The freedom is referring to two things. You are free from taxation and you are free from service. Of the three things, this would have been far and away the biggest reward. Never having to fight as a soldier and being completely free from all taxation. So Saul is offering a lot. Then David spoke to the men who were standing by him, saying, "What will be done for the man who kills the Philistine and takes away the reproach from Israel? For who is this uncircumcised Philistine that he should taunt the armies of the living God?" The people answered him in accord with this word, saying, "Thus it will be done for the man who kills him." So David hears Goliath taunting, mocking, shaming the God of Israel. Now again, he's been doing this for 40 days. This is the first time the young shepherd boy has heard it, but it is absolutely unbearable to him that this uncircumcised Philistine is allowed to do this. So he is so jealous for the glory and reputation of God, he wants to know who's going to go out there and stop this guy. Sounds very much like Jonathan, when Jonathan referred to the uncircumcised Philistines and he and his armor bearer going and winning the battle for the glory of God. The idea of uncircumcised is just remembering they were the covenant people of God. They were God's people with the one true living God. They shouldn't put up with this. Now, this is a very important part of the story. As a matter of fact, maybe the most important part of the story. I've mentioned twice before in our Samuel study that when Hebrew writers give you the very first dialogue out of the mouth of a main character, it often is to characterize that character. So in the book of 1 Samuel, there will be three main characters: Samuel, Saul, and David. What were the first words recorded out of the mouth of Samuel? It was the night when God was calling to Samuel and he thought it was Eli. The very first recorded words out of the mouth of Samuel were, "Here am I," which reflected his obedience, which would characterize Samuel, his obedience to God. Do you remember what the first words were out of the mouth of Saul? It's when they were looking for the donkeys. The very first words were, "Let's quit and go home." And that would define the lack of character and courage in Saul. That's just the kind of leader he would become. So this is the very first dialogue out of the mouth of David. And the very first thing is David is jealous for the glory and the reputation of God. He just cannot stand it that this uncircumcised Philistine is trash-talking the one true living God. And David wants to know who's going to shut this guy up. So that characterizes David. God had said before he was going to make a change in kings because he wanted a man after his own heart. And this clearly indicates this is true of David. This is why David has been anointed the next king of Israel. What happens next is as predictable as the sunrise. Now Eliab, his oldest brother, heard when he spoke to the men, and Eliab's anger burned against David, and he said, "Why have you come down, and with whom have you left those few sheep in the wilderness? I know your insolence and the wickedness of your heart, for you have come down in order to see the battle." But David said, "What have I done now? Was it not just a question?" Then he turned away from him to another and said the same thing. And the people answered the same thing as before. Now remember, these were the brothers that were passed by Samuel in order to finally get to David to be anointed the next king of Israel. You would have to imagine from that moment on, there was some tension, maybe some anger, maybe some bitterness, very much like the Joseph story. So now David shows up at the front lines. His three brothers are professional soldiers. And David's a little shepherd boy. But the first time that David hears Goliath shame his God, it is unbearable to him. And he wants to know who's going out there to shut this guy up. David's passion for God and God's reputation and David's courage and faith exposed the lack of courage and faith in the hearts of Saul and the other soldiers. They were paralyzed by fear. For 40 days they had been paralyzed by fear. So David's courage and faith now exposes their lack of faith and courage, and they're not taking it well. In very predictable fashion, they lash out at David. They question his motives. They even kind of insult him. With whom did you leave those few sheep? You can just hear it. You got a few sheep back home, you know, who's taking care of them? It's interesting that Eliab attacks David's heart, your insolence, your pride, your wickedness, the wickedness of your heart. We were told in chapter 16 that man looks at the outward appearance, but God looks at the heart. The very reason God chose David was his heart. But now Eliab and his brothers have been exposed. And so immediately they judge and attack David's heart and motives. I think one of the things you have to understand and come to grips with is if you're going to be a serious Christ follower and your life is going to be defined by faith and courage and doing the right thing, you are going to expose the fear and the lack of faith in others. And when you do something, it is going to expose their fear and unwillingness to do something. And that is going to cause them to lash out. Nobody likes to have their fear and insecurity exposed. It would be great if I could promise you this morning that if you get serious about Jesus and seek to influence others for him, that the only stones that will be thrown at you are stones from the enemy. But what I'm telling you this morning is you will have stones thrown at you from members of your own army. And that is part of what it means to have the courage to lead. So David responds in such a way that it seems fairly obvious this has happened before, because he says, "What have I done now?" You get this sense, this isn't the first time that his brothers have lashed out at him. Verse 31, when the words which David spoke were heard, they told them to Saul, and he sent for him. David said to Saul, "Let no man's heart fail on account of him. Your servant will go and fight with this Philistine." Then Saul said to David, "You are not able to go against the Philistine to fight with him, for you are but a youth. But he has been a warrior since his youth." But David said to Saul, "Your servant was tending his father's sheep when a lion or a bear came and took a lamb from the flock. I went out after him and attacked him and rescued it from his mouth. And when he rose up against me, I seized him by the beard and struck him and killed him. Your servant has killed both a lion and a bear. This uncircumcised Philistine will be like one of them, since he has taunted the armies of the living God." And David said, "The Lord who delivered me from the paw of the lion and the paw of the bear will deliver me from the hand of this Philistine." And Saul said to David, "Go, and may the Lord be with you." Then Saul clothed David with his garments and put a bronze helmet on his head, and he clothed him with armor. David girded his sword over his armor and tried to walk, for he had not tested them. So David said to Saul, "I cannot go with these, for I have not tested them." And David took them off, and he took his stick in his hand and chose for himself 5 smooth stones from the brook. He put them in the shepherd's bag, which he had even in his pouch, and his sling was in his hand, and he approached the Philistine. So David's question brings him into the court of Saul. Saul's in his tent. You just imagine the scene. Here's this professional army. Here's King Saul. Here's this little shepherd boy. And he comes before the king and says, "No need to be afraid. I'll take the giant." And Saul, the king, says, "You can't do that. You're a little boy." And he's been fighting since he was a little boy. I love David's answer, because what David is saying is, "I have been through God's school of leadership. I'm ready for this moment." That as a shepherd boy, He had taken on a lion and a bear. It would have been relatively common for an ancient Near East shepherd to battle both of those animals. A lion and a bear came in to steal the sheep, and David goes after them. He takes them on, he kills them, he rescues the sheep. I love the imagery. Last week we talked about David as a type of Christ. In the New Testament, Satan is described as a roaring lion seeking someone to devour. Jesus is described as the good shepherd. You get this scene where the lion takes one of the sheep trying to get away. The good shepherd goes after him, kills the lion, rescues the sheep. It's such a beautiful picture of the Messiah to come. But David is saying, if God gave me the strength and the courage and the faith to kill a lion and a bear, then he will give me what I need to kill the giant. David didn't just show up one day and suddenly have the courage to take on a giant. He had spent time in God's school of leadership, and God had grown his faith and courage. He was ready for this day. His speech was very compelling because King Saul says, okay, I think you're ready. May the Lord be with you. Go. Now, it's important again to understand this wasn't a situation where if David goes out and loses, then they send the next champion. This was winner take all. If David, the little shepherd boy, loses, they're all now slaves to the Philistines. So everything was at stake. And yet somehow Saul was so convinced by David, he gives him the green light to go. David tries to wear Saul's armor. That's not going to work. Takes it all off. And part of David's speech will be, it's not by sword, by armor. It's not by any of that. It's by the power of God to deliver Israel. So armed with his staff and his slingshot, picks up a few stones, and out he goes. Then the Philistine came on and approached David with the shield bearer in front of him. When the Philistine looked and saw David, he disdained him. He was insulted, basically, is saying that Israel would send a little boy to fight him. For he was but a youth and ruddy and a handsome appearance. The Philistine said to David, am I a dog that you come to me with sticks? And the Philistine cursed David by his gods. The Philistine also said to David, come to me and I will give your flesh to the birds of the sky and the beasts of the field. So Goliath can do some pretty good trash talking there. Then David said to the Philistine, you come to me with a sword, a spear, and a javelin, but I come to you in the name of the Lord of hosts, the God of the armies of Israel, whom you have taunted. For this day the Lord will deliver you up into my hands, and I will strike you down and remove your head from you. And I will give the dead bodies of the army of the Philistines this day to the birds of the sky and the wild beasts of the earth, that all the earth may know that there is a God in Israel, and that all the assembly may know that the Lord does not deliver by sword or by spear, for the battle is the Lord's, and he will give you into our hands. So Goliath does some pretty good trash talking, but David does some really good trash talking. But you can see that David is so motivated by the glory and reputation of God. He can't take this. And he believes with all his heart that God will be faithful. God will give him the victory. As a matter of fact, he makes this big speech that by the time this is over, everybody's going to know that the God of the Hebrew people is the one true living God. So that is what is driving, motivating David to do this. Then it happened when the Philistine rose and came and drew near to David, that David ran quickly toward the battle line to meet the Philistine. And David put his hand into the bag and took from it a stone and slung it and struck the Philistine on the forehead. And the stone sank into his forehead so that he fell on his face to the ground. Thus David prevailed over the Philistine with a sling and a stone. And he struck the Philistine and killed him. But there was no sword in David's hand. So David ran and stood under the Philistine and took his sword and drew it out of his sheath and killed him and cut off his head with it. When the Philistines saw that their champion was dead, they fled. The men of Israel and Judah arose and shouted and pursued the Philistines as far as the valley and to the gates of Ekron. And the slain Philistines lay along the way to Sharaim, even to Gath and Ekron. The sons of Israel returned from chasing the Philistines and plundered their camps. Then David took the Philistine's head and brought it to Jerusalem, but he put his weapons in his tent. Now when Saul saw David going out against the Philistine, he said to Abner, the commander of the army, "Abner, whose son is this young man?" And Abner said, "By your life, O king, I do not know." The king said, "You inquire whose son the youth is." So when David returned from killing the Philistine, Abner took him and brought him before Saul with the Philistine's head in his hand. Saul said to him, "Whose son are you, young man?" And David answered, "I am the son of your servant, Jesse the Bethlehemite." So the Philistine, Goliath, comes down the valley. David runs to meet him. There isn't really a lot of detail. David puts a rock in his slingshot, drills him in the forehead. Down goes Goliath. You'll notice in the text that the death scene is actually repeated. This is a technique that's used in a Hebrew narrative to kind of slow things down and dwell on it a little bit. It's almost like an instant replay or slow motion. So the first description is David hits him in the forehead, Goliath goes down, kills him. The second description gives us a little more detail. It seems likely the stone hit him in the forehead, knocked him out. David runs over, doesn't have a sword, pulls Goliath's sword, probably runs him through, kills him, and then cuts off his head. Fairly typical behavior in the ancient Near East. He keeps the sword, which is important because it will come up in a subsequent part of the story, and takes the head, and it ends up in Jerusalem. Because at this time, the Jebusites controlled Jerusalem, and Israel doesn't get Jerusalem until David is king. It's likely the text is just telling us the head eventually ends up in Jerusalem. So David wins this great victory for God, and the Israelite army defeats the Philistines. There is some question as to why Saul and Abner don't recognize David. There's a couple explanations that are given. Some think that because David was maybe 12-ish before and now maybe he's 15 or 16, there's a lot of change and maturity. Maybe he's grown a beard and all of that, and Saul didn't recognize him. I don't think chapter 16 implies they were best buddies and hung out. He was the king. He had people in and out all the time. Maybe a better explanation, though, is that what Saul was saying is, who is this guy? In other words, I know he's David and I know he plays an instrument, but what accounts for this courage? What accounts for this little shepherd boy going out and defeating the giant? He's wanting to know more his lineage and what makes him so special. At this point, David is going to become part of Saul's family. He's going to marry Saul's daughter. So it seems like a logical question, who is this guy? We often refer to this story as the story of David and Goliath, but more correctly, it is the story of David and Saul. God is demonstrating why it is necessary that Saul is out as king and David will be in as the new king of Israel. One of the ways to reveal what's really in the heart of a king is introduce a giant into the story and see what happens. But now what has happened is not only does God see what's in the heart of David, now the people have seen what's in the heart of David. Now it's pretty obvious that there is a dramatic difference between Saul and David, and David becomes the much more appealing choice to be king. This is a great moment for David. This is a great victory, but this is the beginning of the people recognizing David would be the greater king, which pushes Saul's insecurity buttons, which will begin what will be a decade and a half nightmare for David, as he will go through God's school of leadership for a decade and a half, a life of misery, until he is finally put on the throne and will become the greatest king in the history of Israel. This is just the beginning of what will be a nightmare. Thinking about this story, we're reminded that David didn't just show up one day and suddenly become a hero, but there were things going on in private, in the wilderness, with the sheep, that got him ready for this day. We talked about this last week. For years, he had cultivated his skills as a musician with an audience of sheep. Obviously, for years, he had perfected his ability with a slingshot. That in private, with no one to applaud except a few sheep, he took on a lion and a bear. And God cultivated within him a courage and a faith that would be necessary in that moment when he was called upon to be a giant slayer. So we're back to where we were last week. You may wish your life was different in all kinds of ways, but it's not different. It is what it is today. So let's live in the world of reality today. So here's the question: what are you doing today to cultivate a heart for God? What are you doing today to pursue an intimate relationship with Christ? What are you doing today that reveals that you are serious about being a Christ follower? What are you doing today that is cultivating your equivalent of David as a musician, of David with his slingshot? You know, what are the lions and the bears in your world today that God is asking you to trust him with, to cultivate within you character and courage and faith, to grow you as a Christian and a leader, in order that you might be ready when you get the call? Today, it may be a lion or a bear. Today, you're cultivating what is necessary inside of you, because none of you know. Tomorrow, you may get the call to be a giant slayer. I just hope you're ready. Our Father, we thank you this morning that you love us. You love us so much that you prepare us, you change us. God, you call us to know you in a deep and intimate way, to cultivate the skills and the talents that you've given us. Lord, you put lions and bears in our path to cultivate our faith and our courage, in order that we would be ready on the day that you call us to be a giant slayer. God, I pray that each of us in the room this morning would be faithful today in wherever we find ourselves, in order that we might be ready for your glory, jealous for your reputation, to slay a giant tomorrow. Lord, in Jesus' name, amen.